Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is Ellie Stewart. Not really, but maybe. according to, what's his name, Camping?
Yes, Harold Camping, yes.
Harold Camping. But, Al, if you listen to Preston, it doesn't look like we have much of a good year ahead of us either.
No? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. But I tell you, if everything happens the way Preston is talking about with the electromagnetic storm and the different problems that we're facing, my Christ, we could wind up being all primitive again, you know.
Well, that's a fact. That could happen, you know. But understand that this happened before and it'll happen again.
Oh God.
We're in for some different times. And what you were mentioning, earthquakes, Leo, you know, I think that's one thing that scares me right now. There's so much activity going on. And, you know, the whole West Coast is about to break right off. And that's no exaggeration. You know, up in Washington and Oregon, a lot of activity up there. Mount Rainier, Minehood, and Mount St. Helens.
Tell me something.
And they're all quite active at this point. And I don't know.
West...
You know, I really don't know. But I really feel Mother Nature has got a surprise for us. It has been surprising us.
Tell me something, George. If the West Coast actually broke off, right, from the rest of the country, what would actually happen to it? I mean, would it become an island, or would it just sink, or what would happen?
I don't know. You know, it all depends how the plates reposition themselves. When I say plates, the tectonic plates. And I'm not a geoman. I don't know about the crust of the Earth, but I know there's a great plate right there where both the plates come together, and it makes up the Rocky Mountains, that whole western area all the way up
right.
to
that's how it formed. It was through pressure.
It's pressure on the plates of
pushing up each other.
The West really moving east.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm concerned right now with the where the northern part of the United States are.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen too much of all those maps you sent me and stuff, and I didn't see too much activity in this area, but. Some, but not much. Well, what do you...
There was one 2 days ago, I think, just out of Youngstown, Ohio. It was yesterday.
No, I'm talking about here where we are. You're in New York State, and I'm in Connecticut. But, I don't really see too much earthquake activity on those charts, you know, in these areas. I think it was a couple, but that was the one that hit Washington.
Yeah. There's a 2.6 earthquake that hit just above New York in the Canadian border.
Yeah. Could that even be felt by us?
Well, I don't know. It could probably be felt by me. I live just south of Albany. But...
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, Leo. I think Rod called when he was talking last night from Texas. And there was a large quake that hit them yesterday. I think it was 4.8 megs.
Wow. So everything's happening, huh? Jesus.
Oh, well. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, if California went, do you think it would take out, do you think there'd be other states? Well, like, I don't know what's right up next, Nevada, I guess, or...
Well, yeah, there's been several maps that have been circulating and rumored. One is a Lori Ford map, the Buy of America map, and it shows after the volcanic and the earthquake activity ends that... there's an altogether new western coastline, And a good portion of California is gone, a good part of Nevada and Arizona. And
I think what caused the Great Flood was when the Atlantic, you know, during that, it was 25,000 years ago, actually, when the Diluvian, our pre-Diluvian, I should say, culture, Atlantis was still there. But then after that, we had, after that was the Great Flood, you know, and earthquakes and floods, and that was, and that wiped out 95% of the world population. And then the water subsided and everything created the oceans again, and that we have today. But that could happen again. I mean, if you had that major of a seismic, off the chart seismic event happen, you know what I mean? Especially in California area where the Pacific would drown the rest of the world, you know what I mean? Or could. And I can't even imagine how, if you displaced the entire state of California, or Washington and Oregon, Craig, all the way up to Alaska, even, you know, what would be the ramifications of that as to the whole rest of the continent? I mean, water. I mean, maybe the Rocky Mountains would hold back the flood tides, but it's really questionable as to how much would actually be ruined, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another map that's been circulating, the Michael Scalion map.
Yeah.
And he shows more of how the Great Lakes supposedly is going to drain into, you know, the Gulf, using the widening the Mississippi River.
Oh my God!
And how basically the Great Lakes is going to flood the landscape around them, and a good part of New York is going to be flooded in the low-lying areas. In the mountainous areas, I mean, they'll be safe there.
Well, you got Lake Erie there too, yeah. And
well, yeah, that's you know, but that's going to submerge more of Pennsylvania, and you know, the southern states from where we are now.
Right.
So there are different scenarios that are being played out, but you have to understand that of the Earth has changed over billions of years, and you know, it's hard to believe that in Antarctica, you know, there's proof that at one time there was a tropical region down there.
Wow.
And you know, it's hard to believe that you know, we'll go into an ice age where we'll spend 100,000 to 200,000 years under ice, and nothing would grow. And yet after that, after we dry out a bit, we have seeds germinating from the last stock before the ice age, where seeds were able to survive. You know, and whatever else needed to survive, you know, to repopulate the earth with vegetation and so forth. So, you know, it's hard to believe that after so long, you know, the earth can die out and everything on it, but it will come back to life again.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing the ability that nature has to create life and create new life and new species and stuff.
Yeah, it does. It continues. You know, they talk about extraction of the animals and creatures now, the extermination. No, but we have more life now developing than we have that's dying out. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
I think so. But you know,
there's more and more animals and things that we never knew existed.
They're discovering many, many new tropical things and underwater species and all kinds of things. But I think I'm a believer that we're just visitors. You know what I mean? We occupied the planet because it had a reasonably temperate and hospitable climate. So, I think that you know, the stories about the Anunnaki leaving like 25,000 years ago, right before, right at, you know, that it might have escaped the polar shift, got away, and but left the Noah's Ark, if you will, the DNA, you know, safe, by the DNA of species safe, so they could rebreed once later. That maybe that's it, or some other metaphor, but that appears to me to be something that could have very plausibly happened. Those that were able to escape did. You know? Are you there, George?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Able to escape.
Yeah, I'm saying that those that the Anunnaki who escaped the polar shift, you know, they probably took off in their jet, spacecraft, you know, and got away from the Earth.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, left their seed, if you will, left their DNA, generated a new species down here, you know, Cro-Magnon, wherever we were. But it seems to me that very plausible. If anybody logically had the ability to leave the planet during the time of a global turmoil, they would, you know.
Uh-huh.
I would think. But leave it to whoever else. I mean, this goes way back. You know, George, it goes way back to the days when we were studying. We were talking about Thoth, you know. And,
right, yes.
Makes me think, like, that was, he came to Earth, he came back to educate the barbarians, basically, the cannibals. People were cannibals.
Right.
And he taught them how to civilization, how to farm, how to do all these things. And, you know, and then, of course, he reincarnated a number of times after that as Hermes and so many others. But
let's back it up a bit with Thoth, so understand what he did. He gave us the ability to read and write, and he was a father of medicine. What he was able to do was give us the ability to learn knowledge by reading knowledge or understanding knowledge, what has been written down and noted.
Right.
So once we're able to see that and read it, then we understand it. It's like we are closed out from the world, and the only way we can learn about the world is through reading and writing and communicating. So he gave us the ability to communicate, but also to understand and understand knowledge. And since Thoth, our abilities or our evolution abilities in most of life was like a stair-step evolution. It wasn't something that took thousands and thousands of years for it to develop and to evolve. It was actually given to us, and it was like a stair step. We came from one understanding to another understanding, where we were given the ability. And it's really skipping that growth stage. So he gave us the ability to do that, but understand mankind at that time. We have closed ourselves off from the world in a polarity consciousness, where instead of seeing the world as it is, we can only identify the world with what we think, what we know, and that's why we don't rely on our body to tell us what we're experiencing. We're relying on our mind to remind us of what we've experienced before or what we will experience if we continue on the same path. It's not...
You there, George? Hey, George, I lost you. Did you hit your mute button? Oops. Hey, George just got disconnected for some reason. I'm sure he'll call back in a second. Well, I'll tell you what, this, why don't I let you listen to a little music here before, and we'll be right back. I'll see what happened to George. Because of the polar, the negative polarity,
yeah.
North-south polarity. Because right now the polarity is north, south, east, west. And he says if that disrupted it, took away your east-west polarity, then it would it could actually be strong enough to turn the world upside down. All right.
And then what?
Would be your shift. That would be your actual. That would be your polar shift. You know.
But that, would there be a change in you?
Well, I probably wouldn't be around if I, you know, we'd probably be falling into air.
No, you wouldn't, because gravity would act just the opposite. It's not that you wouldn't have gravity.
That's
just
true,
that you reverse the gravity. And that's basically is what's happening. And I mean, the whole Earth physically, I don't think it's going to shift like that.
Well, no.
But the direction and the polarity of the Earth will. That's what's happening now.
Yeah, but remember when archaeologists couldn't believe that they actually found woolly mammoths in frozen, not frozen, in tropical tropical soil. And
right.
It was like, how the hell did this happen? And and the only way they could figure it out was that there was a sudden tip of the Earth,
right.
Which
yes. Mm-hmm.
Everything was flipped upside down, and totally. Where if you were in the North Pole, now you'd be in the South Pole. You know what I mean?
Well, it wouldn't be that great, but there was some movements that the Earth did stop, and things were still flying, and you know there was a lot of things. That you couldn't make any sense out of it because they were ground up and just torn to pieces and shreds.
Ooh,
you know,
yeah.
Not only animals and trees, but also humans.
Everything.
And you know, this is what happens during these events. And some where they're thrown into instant cool areas where they freeze, and that's what happened to this elephant that you're referring to.
That's right.
But you know, the Earth does stop. But it will continue up again. It'll continue to move, either right or left. It depends on how it was disrupted and how the energy fields are running. So, you know, it's we're in a situation right now where the magnetics of the Earth is very weak, and even gravity itself is. Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
All right, I'm getting some crazy stuff here. Who's to say what really happens other than what happens is all magnetics is distorted, and
yeah.
We will be distorted. And what Preston is referring to is the source, and, you know, it's like a super pulse of electricity, which will burn all circuits out completely. And
right.
Also, it could distort... It can distort the biofields that we are connected with, very subtle fields. But I don't think we have the energy field of Merkaba that we've talked about many, many times. I think we're able to use that, I think, to shield ourselves from some of these onslaught of electrical storms that we come in contact with. Not only from our sun, but also from other things in our environment. I think that we can hold our own when it comes to that. But what Preston is talking about could be very dangerous, and it could wipe out our communications, you know, for months and months and even years, because we would have nothing left. We'd have to start all over again.
Yeah, and he said depending on the magnitude of the storms that we get, he says it could go anywhere from screwing up our radios and communication to frying our entire electric grid. He says to actually frying us, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And he says that's how strong it could become. So they're keeping a close watch on that. And
I think Mother Earth would want to keep us around, so I'm not worried about wiping us out, Leo. I'm really not. Mother Nature has a way of preserving her evolution, and we are part of it. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah. But don't mess with Mother Nature.
I didn't know. I was listening to what Preston had to say. This is all some new stuff. But it's getting to another understanding of the Philadelphia experiment that I wanted to touch upon. We never did. And I thought it was interesting on some of the characteristics that the Montauk had with the Philadelphia and with other fairy tales or stories, just like the Amityville Horror and so forth.
Okay. So, I don't really know. I mean, if you listen to Preston, it sounds pretty grim, But,
well, it does. I'm having a phone with this. Hold on for a minute. Hold on for 1 second, Leo.
Yeah, that's okay. For those of you who don't know who we're talking about as far as Preston Nichols, we had him on last night with Peter Moon and George, and we were talking about the Montauk Project and so on. And I was just filling in the listeners as to refer to last night's show, and they can Google up Preston Nichols as well and see who he is. He's got a good presence on Facebook and some videos up there and whatnot. Preston is a remarkable scientist, a physicist, I should say, and his expertise is electromagnetics. And he showed me an invention yesterday that he expects will turn the world upside down, the physics world upside down. He's planning to come out with that in the near future with the patent and so on. And he's quite an expert. He's got 3 PhDs in physics, and he's worked his whole life in the sound. Do you know what I found out? And I didn't know this. He told me yesterday.
He was the audio recording
company that recorded Woodstock. Imagine that. Yeah, he was the guy that did all the sound tracks to Woodstock. Somebody else did the video, but he did all the sound recording, and it was amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And he said he did. What's up?
That he said he did?
Yeah, he was the guy that was filming it. Not filming it, recording the sound.
Recording it, yeah.
He had set up the entire sound stage stuff, you know what I mean? And recorded the entire event. And on film. And so on. And on tape. And they put it together right afterwards and created the movie, So it was really, I was very surprised that his recording of that event was the seminal recording of the first rock and roll event, one of the greatest events of that generation, going back to 1969. So that was, I just was very impressed with that he was the guy who was responsible for that the sound that turned on an entire generation, So.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Preston, he has an understanding of producing electricity.
Yeah.
And different powers. When it comes to electromagnetics, believe me, I am no whiz. I don't know too much at all.
But he is right there.
I'm amazed at his abilities to create these things.
Well, you know, being involved with psychotronics for a number of years. In fact, one of the co-founders on the psychotronics on Long Island, Long Island chapter, which Preston was associated with, I learned a lot about energies and frequencies, and I expanded off with crystals, and of course with the extraterrestrial intelligence in trying to get an understanding of the whole phenomena, and that's how I was brought into the Montauk, and along with the Philadelphia experiment, is because at that time in 1989, my expertise was basically research on civilizations of antiquity, and also the flying type, the extraterrestrials, and you know the different legends and the knowledge, included a lot of Zechariah Sitchin's work. You know, when he came out in 75, he actually started me off into worlds unknown, I think, with not only the possibilities of the written record of those off-planet people. And one thing I did learn is that, you know, besides some of the technologies connected with the off-planet understandings, frequencies or electricity can be very beneficial, and it can be very harmful, too. It's just a matter of how you use it. And if nothing else, in the last 150 years, not only understanding a new way of communicating with one another, but we are able to communicate with crystals and to link up or integrate our consciousness and our three-dimensional realities, you know, with the lights and so forth.
Yeah.
And
Preston
can produce the energies or the frequencies and so forth. But sometimes they can be very harmful and beneficial, not beneficial. Like certain frequencies will heal bones, and certain frequencies will just totally destroy them, pulverize them. And
right.
It's understanding these electromagnetics.
Yeah, I know. That's basically what Preston was talking about. When we were discussing the ability that the solar storm could possibly just destroy us, obliterate us, from the earth, destroy our bodies, you know, and that'd be interesting. But
it'll also tell you about the heart program too, the heart program is actually building. It was a shield, and it is a shield. Shielding us from some of the solar radiation that we're experiencing and the energies.
Right.
That was part of the original HOP program, and that's what it's used for. It's like a shield.
Yeah, it's a sun shield, basically. But I wanted to get back to the next week's. I wanted to talk a little bit about next Friday's show. Because I want to make that kind of special, and that it's the 28th of October, and which is the end day for the Mayan calendar's civilization consciousness awareness day, if you will.
That's right.
So there's to be a complete global awakening, spiritual awakening. At that time, and which is next weekend, and I'm really curious to see how it's going to unfold, because it may also be the time. I'm predicting that it may be the Black Friday, you know, another Black Friday, because the last two that we had, big ones, was in 1929, October 29th, 1929. And the last one we had was in 1987. A big one was 1987, October 27th. So it's just those two numbers are so close that October 28th being a Friday would be, you know, would be amazing, you know. What do you think, George?
Well, I think you may be right, Leo. So I'll tell you what I'm planning on doing and what I have done all week is I'm going to go out and get all the sales in the stores and take advantage of it.
Well, that's a good idea. That's
there you go, my friend. I'll tell you what, I'm enjoying life, and, you know, this is my heaven here, the journey home. And
yeah.
I'm enjoying the hell out of this. So, you know, all I know is I got to get something to put my feet up and, of course, plenty of popcorn, and I'm going to watch it happen. That's all I can tell you. And I'm very optimistic. You know, I'm expecting great things.
Yeah.
Early. I mean, you know, instead of looking into gloom, look at the possibilities. Hey, maybe this is the ending of the gloom, and maybe good things will come.
Right.
Okay, well, I know good things are going to come because, you know...
politically and mentally enlightening time where everyone is awakened to what's going on. And
who knows what's going to happen with politics in the next week or so forth. Everybody's at their throat completely. Hey, the president announced today he's bringing all his troops home but before the end of the holidays. How do you like that?
Yeah, you know why, don't you?
Why is that?
Because he's going to need them to fight off all the Occupy Wall Street guys and the rest of the country when they go after his ass in December.
You know, I think it's pathetic to watch Gaddafi being beat up on the street. I mean, here's a leader of a country being drugged like a dog to be eaten. It's pathetic. I mean, where have we gone to? We're so damn barbaric. It's meaningless. It really is. You don't do that. But, hey, nothing surprised me. And what you said about the president getting our troops home, well, first of all, you know, we should bring our troops home now. And, you know, not to comfort us in the time that we're facing, you know.
Exactly.
But bring them home permanent.
No, I agree with you fully. I agree with you on that. But I'm just saying that, you know, being skeptical of anything Obama does or this government does, you know, now would be a good time to bring some of the soldiers back, right? You know, so they can keep them on active duty securing the White House and the Capitol building. Because if this thing happens, they're going to need 5,000-10,000 troops there just to keep people from marching on the Capitol. With guns.
Yeah,
so,
I know, Leo. That's kind of scary. But, you know, I do believe there are peaceful ways. And, you know, we just have to open our hearts to it, and he'll be exposed. He'll come. We can do it.
Yeah,
maybe
we need an
intermediate here, some kind of a intermediate that maybe can help break the ice. Because, you know,
we would have to go in there and kill these guys, is what I'm saying. No. Well, you could have a nonviolent protest. You go there, you march there, you sit in on the Capitol steps, you sit in the Congress and the lobbies, you know, in the balconies, you stay there. You know, occupy until those bastards leave. You know what I mean? Fill them up and those guys are gone. And then wipe them the hell out of Congress, wipe the slate clean, go after the Supreme Court, wipe the helmet the hell out, okay, change all the laws, and put in, you know, keep the Constitution, you know, fix it the way it was supposed to be, you know? You know, that's what I'd like to see. That can all be done through nonviolence.
That Norman Rockwell painting this picture? Give me a break.
What's that?
What do you think? You got Norman Rockwell painting this picture?
I didn't get that. Am I a Norman Rockwell?
Right, painting a picture, Leo. Never mind.
I am. We're kind of trying to keep some kind of semblance of nationalism or pride, you know, an American pride. Yeah, I guess I am. But
yeah,
you know, the
they
only
do
thing
it every year up there in his hometown, where they, you know, dress up the town like Norman Rockwell had it in his days. But that's something different. That's part of America and our heritage. But you know, there is a I believe there is an easier way out of this than blood and guts and pain. I think if nothing else, we can all join hands in hand and, you know, redo or remake or start again something different. And we could do it peacefully. I mean, Gandhi did it peacefully. It took a few years, but I don't think we need that much time.
I think they got the word.
They get deleted like a Daffy. They go down very quick.
And, but you got to remember, Gandhi, before Gandhi made success, there was a lot of violence against those nonviolence protesters. All right?
Yeah.
A lot of thousands of people died. And hundreds of thousands died, in India. And then, the British weren't going to give up that easy. They didn't give a shit about nonviolence. They went in and slaughtered everybody. All right? And then it made people so damn mad that, they revolted and kicked England out of there. And that's the same thing that's happening here now. When you say that 82% of this country, of the voters in this country, can't stand the Congress or the president, what the hell does that mean? You know? Right?
Well, yeah, you're right.
They don't want
To step outside the line is a different story, because there are consequences, and that's the problem. I think the veil has been lifted, or the curtain has been lifted. People see this for what it is. It's one big illusion that's holding them down. And I think once the illusion, this illusion has been lifted completely, and this is what they're doing now with the protesting, then they'll see it for what it is. And, the finances, the banking system, I mean, they're all running scared. And, the politicians are going to start running scared, because you take a look at what's happening in other countries. That's an example of what happens to these guys. And they don't throw them out of office. They take them to the streets and let the dogs have what's left.
That's right.
It's pathetic. But it's human nature. It's our way, right?
Yeah, you got to remember, it's karma. And the only reason these people hated him so much is because he was a prick, you know?
But what comes around goes around. Understand it. So if that's part of your illusion or what you're drawing toward yourself, you'll find plenty of it. Kellerman talks about October 28th as a time where we go into co-creation of our world. And supposedly from that point on, we will be co-creators of the illusion of the life that we live, that we are involved in. And, you know, it could mean a possible ascension when the shit hits the fan when it comes to the geological changes. Or, you know, it could be something different. It could be, a pulse of energy that, yes, will burn out all our electrical systems now, but maybe it will open up the advancement of bioenergy fields that we have just tapped the surface with. And I think tapping the surface is understanding, first of all, the DNA, the mapping of DNA. We know the mapping of the DNA. We also have the ability to make machines and nanotechnology to go into the body and also develop life forms, artificial life forms. So, you know, we have now some knowledge. What we have to do is we just have to learn how to use that knowledge and the betterment of all mankind and all life, instead of certain life forms and certain powers.
I'm just looking forward to it because whether something happens or not, I believe something's been happening for the last maybe 5 or 6 months, all right, that has been visible, very visible, and it's starting, and the global upheaval that we're seeing now is in humanity is the same upheaval we're seeing mirrored in our seismic activity, as well as our solar activity. Everything is being electric charged. You know, everything is becoming arriving at their zenith. You know, as far as electric power goes, as far as your mind power. I mean, I just constantly marvel at the internet that I can find, just by putting in the word or putting in, you know, a couple of words, I can find whatever knowledge I'm looking for, you know what I mean? And more than I ever thought I'd find, you know, about a subject. But because of the internet, which is virtually an intuitive device, you know, it's an amazing tool communicate with, to be communicating with. It's just remarkable, you know, just remarkable. So that to me is the living proof that we have ascended. I mean, over 20 years. I mean, I've lived through it. You've lived through it before when everything was typed on a manual typewriter or written in a letter and, you know, postmarked and mailed, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Today, I mean, it would take 3 to 4 days for anybody to get a letter through the post office, maybe a week, depending on where you lived in the country. But now, I mean, you can send it instantly. You know, the minute you think of it, you can send it, you know, by email. And anything, pictures, a song, or, you know, a thought, or somebody else's articles, or, I mean, just amazing. That's why I enjoy my Facebook account so much, because I can, anything that I see, I can post, you know, there. And it's kind of like an archive for me, because I can store all these articles and videos and everything else right on Facebook, and so other people can see them. It's like, you know, I just find it a fantastic tool, and almost part of your consciousness, you know, manifestation of your immediate thoughts. It's a remarkable tool. I can't. I never, 20, 30 years ago, but 30 years ago, there's no way that I was even thinking that could happen. You know what I mean?
Well,
can you remember, can you think of that in the 70s, George?
Yeah. Yes, I can.
Of the internet?
Well, no, not the internet, I think, just the information. And what I said before about my involvement with the Montauk Project and Philadelphia Experiment, mine was the alien connection.
Right, right.
Now, the question that I had at that time is that one thing that fascinated me was some of these alien creatures had crystals, and they had crystals in their hand, and they used to communicate with these crystals. And these crystals will do certain things, like open a hole in the wall for them, or, you know, to see a picture, a holographic design, or whatever. But it was all done through these crystals, large enough that you can hold in the palm of your hand.
Wow.
And I went on a quest for years trying to get more understanding how, first of all, how this could be, and second of all, artifacts from Atlantis, and that were left behind, some of these crystals, and how they could have been used for this. So, you know, that was part of my exploration, I think, of Atlantis from the technological side of it, not the spiritual side, which my quest for the 20 years before that, what I was involved with, or 15 years before that. But it's, we have come to a point where now we can hold a crystal or something in our hand that's crystal, and that we can talk and communicate and see things, like see a TV, see a monitor. And we have reached that technology now where we could do that. But this is just a vision that I was looking for because it was part of this alien technology that we were exposed to. And we were exposed in the past, and we will in the future. And part of the information that I've been looking for over the years was, you know, first of all, the knowledge that we had under the Great Sphinx. You know, Casey talks about a hall of records and what these records were. And these records were devices, including possibly some of the these crystal things that I'm talking about that goes in my hand. That was part of the artifacts were left behind for us to reabsorb into our culture, into our consciousness. And, you know, it's amazing what I found, but we have that, and I think we are left with the understanding of crystals, and if nothing else, crystals are integrating within our body by our use of not only the computers, but also GPS systems, all those computer devices around us. We are consciously connecting with them. And that's through the emotional body and the emotional body dealing the energies and the frequencies. We're giant piezoelectric crystals that are walking around. And what we're doing is that we're communicating and holding information. And I don't want to go any deeper into this, but we have the amazing abilities, and we know about them now. But I think we're at a time where we're going to put these to work in ways that we've never imagined.
I agree with you, George. I think I do. I think we're on the verge.
Well, yeah, we are in the 12th hour, and we are experiencing that now. But you have to understand that there's two sides to every coin, and even in our polarity consciousness, our polarity world, we can't get away from this. We are going to see and experience both sides. Yeah, it makes no difference, what side you look at it. You know, is it good or bad? It makes no difference. It doesn't matter because it's still the same consciousness that's being exposed for itself. And those who don't believe in the Philadelphia experiment, the Montauk Project, you know, they may be right. But understand there are two sides to the story. And when you have one side, you have something of value. So, you know, it's more than a legend. It's a reality, and it's the energies that go into it that keep it alive. And, see, that's the artificialness that these programs were talking about. And it was through the Montauk that Duncan talked about going back in time. Now, what they were trying to do, the Martians and also the Montauk Project, is build an artificial Merkaba, something that was not alive. Now, I talk about life that we're able to produce that now. But what they wanted to do is produce an artificial Merkaba, and they had to give it some kind of living substance or connection, and that's where the operator came in. But once you disconnect that, it is free-floating energy that will dissipate if it has anything to hold it together. And this is where this junior situation is right now, where, you know, you have ethereal energies like a soliton that's still energized and still doing what it has to do, but it's not real. And once the substance uses its energy out, it'll just die out. It'll ground out. But if it hasn't grounded out or beforehand. But, you know, it's the energies that people put into it that keep it alive for what it is.
Now, that's true, George. That's very true. Well, it's 9 o'clock. Believe it or not, we've already slipped through an hour. But I wanted to, I think we're headed there, George, for, I'm not sure.
There's another earthquake in New Mexico today.
New Mexico.
Yeah, New Mexico, yeah. They're sporadically hitting the United States pretty heavy.
Yeah. Well,
it's Alaska too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, George, I think we'll sign out, but I'm looking forward to doing next week's show, next Friday night. Again, and Kapawi tomorrow, or next week, brother. big Kapawi next week. So, you know, that goes. But in the meantime, I'll be talking to you before then, I'm sure. But I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight. And, George, always a pleasure. Let's keep our fingers crossed. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to keep them crossed. Whatever happens, happens.
All right.
Happy with you, my friend. I'll see you next week.
Hey, take care, buddy. That was George Dixon who joined us tonight, and I want to thank him for that. And we covered quite a bit of ground. Also, please, if you can, please check our Thursday night show, yesterday's show, which is up on our show page there, and tap into our discussion where we had George and Preston Nichols and Peter Moon and Lila and myself, and we were discussing Al Bielek, Montauk Project, and a number of other projects of these men. And it was an interesting show, so I recommend it. In the meantime, I want to thank everyone for joining me, and join us again. Oh, don't forget to join us tomorrow, next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and that's the Big Bang Day, October 28th. We'll be talking about what it means, what the day actually means. And we'll see if there's any major significance between this week and next week. And I'm curious to see if the Eurozone goes under and, Wall Street hits. My prediction is the 28th, which is next Friday, for a stock market crash, big time. And possibly even a bank holiday, who knows. I think Bank America is on its way down, though. That'll be happening in the month. So we'll be talking to you, and look forward to talking to you next week. If you like the show, please tell your friends.